walk loneliness or humility, gentleness, bearing, tolerance, love, unity, peace. It's just this message, right? Now contrast that with a verse that is very concise that shows what pride is. And you have Proverbs 13 in verse 10. It's Proverbs 13 verse 10 says, by pride comes nothing but strife, but with the well-advised is wisdom. Now, what's the key word in that? Pride, nothing but strife. I would say strife. What do you get with pride? You get strife. What do you get with humility? You get gentleness, love, tolerance, peace, unity, all of that. It's two completely different spectrums. So what is pride? Dictionary version, it just says inordinate self-esteem. But let's bring it to a religious context. And I made up two definitions of why I think pride and humility are, at least it's open to, obviously, to debate. But pride is, I would say, a disregard for the position of God. So complete disregard for who God is. So we have arrogance, self-willed, reliance of self. Those are some synonyms. Pride at its most basic element is overemphasizing our own importance. What I think. This is what I think. That's pride. Okay? And by doing that, you devalue who God is. And to remove all ambiguity, how does God feel about pride? I think we all know, but let's just prove it from the Bible. Proverbs 8 and 13. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogance, and the evil way. God hates pride and arrogance. Let's turn to Proverbs 6. It's a little bit longer reading there, so let's turn there. Proverbs 6. And it's going to be 16 through 19. These six things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are abomination to him. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift to running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among brethren. And we notice here that what is at the very top of the list? I have a New American Standard says haughty eyes. My version says a prideful look. Pride is at the very top of this. And I don't think that's an accident, because at the root of sin is pride. It's me saying I know what's better for myself, and it's devaluing where God is. So the root of sin. But again, I can sometimes, or very oftentimes, look at verses like that, and I'll just fly right over them. Because, you know, most days, I'm not tempted to shed innocent blood. Okay? I mean, I look at that and it's like, wow, that's some pretty extreme examples. Not me. Check. I'm good. And if I slow down a little bit, I might say, well, I might know someone that would probably fit into this category. But not me. And I think that we kind of fall into that temptations a lot. So let's boil this pride down to see if we can maybe bring it down to our level and see if are we guilty of any of these things. So three areas I want to focus on. First, judgment. And then we're going to talk about anger and then offense. Okay, so judgment's going to be the first one. Let's go to Matthew 7 for that. So it's Matthew 7. So Matthew 7, 1 through 5. So the first two verses of that, Matthew 7, 1 and 2, says, judge not that you be not judged, for with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. Now this, to add a disclaimer, this is not saying that you cannot correct a brother in sin. James 5, 19 and 20, just real fast, says, brethren, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his ways will save a soul. So me pointing out something wrong in your life to save you, that necessitates me making a judgment call. Okay, so we're not talking about that here. Let's continue in Matthew 7, 3 and 4, and we'll kind of start getting to the real application. And it says, and why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye and look at the plank, in your own eye? So we have a scenario here where you have someone that is supposedly sinning, doing something minor, and then you have someone else that feels the need to correct that person. But in reality, in that person's life, there's something really, really big that is wrong. But that person feels so righteous, he needs to go correct this person. That's pride, okay? Let's continue and read verse 5. It says, hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. And then I got two takeaways from that last verse. The first one, before I correct others, I need to be sure that I am doing right in my life and that I'm acting out of love. Okay. And the second is that I need to be continually conducting self-assessments to determine that I am right in the sight of God. Not that I'm right in my own sight, but I'm right in the sight of God. One commentary I read on this when preparing for it says there is nothing, and this is a little bit harder to understand, so just bear with me. It says, there is nothing which so hinders a person from heart-searching self-examination, nothing which so hardens him in self-complacent pride as the habit of finding fault with other people. In other words, I cannot look at myself when I'm looking at someone else. That makes it virtually impossible. Now, I'm guilty of every single one of these statements I'm about to say. Again, just look at yourself and tell me if you've ever even thought this, okay? They're late again. Those kids are terrible. Great, this guy is praying again. You know, sit in, it's going to be long. Think about that. I think we're all guilty of that kind of attitude, okay? Those thoughts like that come from a position of pride. That's not a position of humility and love and gentleness and unity. Just think about that. The second application is anger. Let's turn to Matthew 18. And again, this is something that I, out of probably all of these, I struggle with this one the most. It's just little things getting to me, you know. So let's go to Matthew 18, and it's going to be in verse 21 and 23. And then I will say, when I do become angry, it's almost always from a selfish point of view. There's usually always, I'm not getting my way, I don't want to do this, I'm not watching what I want to watch on Netflix, you know, silly things like that. But it's always from a position of I, me. It's what I want to do. So let's read Matthew 18, 21 through 23. It says, then Peter came to him and said, Lord, one second. Peter came to him and said, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to seven times? Jesus said to him, I do not say to you up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to settle accounts with his servant. And when he had begun to settle accounts, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. So there was a fault committed here. But as he was not able to pay, his master commanded that he be sold with his wife and children and then all that he had and the payment be made. The servant therefore fell down before him saying, Master, have patience on me and I will pay all. Then the master of the servant was moved with compassion, released him, and forgave him of the debt. In verse 28, but the servant went out and found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. And he laid hands on him and took him by the throat, saying, pay me what you owe. So his fellow servant fell down at his feet and begged him, saying, have patience with me. I will pay you all. And he would not, but went out and threw him into prison till he should pay the debt. So when his fellow servants saw what had been done, they were very grieved, and they came and told their master all that had been done. Then the master, after he had called out, said to him, you wicked servant, I forgave you all the debt because you begged me. Should you not also have compassion on your fellow servant, just as I pitied you? And the master was angry. And so think about this. You have, in the context of anger, we are all fellow servants. We are all debtors. Who am I to become angry at you or you at me or anyone else on the outside, much less Christians, just anyone? We're all right there. We're all equally in debt. It's silly to do that, and it's often selfish. And then pride manifests itself in anger because we temporarily lose perspective who God is compared with who we are. And then you might say, but yeah, there's righteous anger. Don't forget Jesus. He went into the temple. He overturned tables. That's righteous anger. Yes, and I would caution you, you're not Jesus and neither am I. Be very, very careful that you're not so righteous and prideful that you think you can be angry and it not affect your judgment. And I say, absolutely do not sin when you're angry, but in times of anger, focus on why you're angry. And if you're like me, most of the time it comes down to there's at least some measure of selfishness in there. And then the transition to the third point with pride is offense. Proverbs 19, verse 11, I think, is a perfect one showing the two relation. It says, the discretion of a man makes him slow to anger, and his glory is to overlook a transgression. So if you could go to 1 Corinthians 6, please. Perfect. And we're going to be reading from 4 through 7 of 1 Corinthians 6. So again, I look at myself, and I'm surprised sometimes when I look at myself of how easily offended I can be. Silly things. I mean, it could be driving. It could be how a customer talks to me. It could be how my boss talks to me. It could be a comment in church, things that just rub you the wrong way. And I think we're probably all guilty of that. You know, Christians, it's kind of funny sometimes. We're supposed to be the wisest people on the planet, right? Because we are who we are. We follow Jesus. We adhere to ideas like, don't worry about tomorrow, love your neighbor as yourself, and we are all sinners saved by grace. But yet, we can be the most offended people we've ever met. People that supposedly are family in Christ, brothers and sisters, can offend us, and it just gets under our skin when it shouldn't be like that. Some meaningless little action or comment can be the catalyst for decades of giving someone the cold shoulder. So let's read 1 Corinthians 6, 4 through 7. And it says, if then you have judgments concerning things pertaining to this life, do you appoint those who are least esteemed by the church to judge? I say this is to your shame. Is it so that there is not a wise man among you, not even one, who will be able to judge between his brethren? But brother goes to law against brother, and that before unbelievers. So what's happening here is Christians, brothers and sisters, are taking each other to court. There's some carnal thing, you know, you didn't pay your taxes or whatever, you know, to me, and now I'm going to take you to court. And Paul's telling them here, one, it doesn't matter. You're offended. You're placing carnal things above spiritual. You're sacrificing the unity of the body of Christ. And on top of that, you're taking it to people that aren't even Christians. So in verse 7, continuing, it says, now therefore, it is already an utter failure for you that you go to law against one another. Why do you not rather accept wrong? Why do you not rather let yourselves be cheated? Worst case scenario is you're cheated. That's it. Let yourself be cheated by caring so much that I get justice. That's pride. And, I mean, we're not talking about doctrinal things. We're talking about things that don't matter. That's my parking place. This is my, you know, spot on the pew. This is, you know, the order of service, whatever it might be. And this is how we get offended. And these statements ring as true today as they did 2,000 years ago. And we're going to dig deeper more into that in the applications phase. But let's get into humility. So humility, contrasted to pride, is an understanding and acknowledgement of our position related to God. And it's our ability to tame our most inward thoughts and our most outward actions to exalt God. Everything we say and do exalts God. That's humility. And it can be our relationships, money, our abilities, our positions, the church itself. I also think stewardship. Stewardship is I'm minding the store for God. Everything God has given me in this life is God's, and I just work for Him. I'm His servant. That's humility. And I never considered the relationship between humility and wisdom, and that the two go perfectly hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. Proverbs 1 and 7 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Wisdom, I've always thought wisdom, and I've heard it said this since I was little, wisdom is knowledge applied. And yes, I get it. It's understanding what the Bible says and living your life. But I'll add one more thing to that. And it's starting to realize that it's much deeper. It's actually the act of making decisions that are a part of God's word from a position of submission and meekness rather than a position of pride. Just because I tell you what the right thing is, it's not me. It's not my law. All I'm doing, I'm just a mouth for God. This is not me. And as soon as I start feeling puffed up with pride that, no, this is the way it is, because I think that's when we get into sin, and that's when we get into problems in God's church. Let's look up Luke 18. That's Luke 18, 9 through 14. And so let's read 9 through 12, Luke 18, 9 through 12, and then we'll continue. It says, also he spoke the parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all I possess. Now, who does this person trust in? I would argue heavily he probably trusts in himself, right? Check, check, check. I did this, I did this, I did this. You know, fasting, check. Tithes, check. Now, let's just pause 1 second, not get too righteous, and say this. No instruments, check. We don't give to orphanages, do we? Check. We do Lord's Supper every day, or every Sunday, check. Are we ever guilty? And I don't say all those things flippantly, but are we ever guilty of boiling the gospel of Christ down to a series of checklists? That what being a Christian is a checklist. There are things that we do, but we don't do them from a position of pride where now you owe me. It's now we humble ourselves. Now let's contrast that with the attitude of the tax collector, 13 and 14. So this is Luke 18, 13 and 14. And the tax collector, standing afar off, would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. This man wouldn't even look up. God, you are here. I'm nothing. That's how the two of us relate, is that we are unrelatable. I'm nothing. And is that not a mentality that all of us need to work on? I know I do. And here's another point with that. When issues arise in the church, when there's a disagreement among brethren, which of these men do you identify with? When you find out someone is in sin, who do you identify with? The Pharisee or the tax collector? Or maybe even they just disagree with you on something. Who are you? Are you the guy that there's a sense of righteous duty that I've got to go out and I've got to make this right? And you're almost gleeful, like, yes, I got them. I'm going to go out there and we're going to get this done. Is that your first reaction? Or are you like the tax collector? Do you go and you pray and that's your first thing you do? Do you first acknowledge your own insufficiency to please God? That, God, I am not perfect. Please give me wisdom to deal with this. Do you appeal in that sense and ask for guidance? And I'll submit to you this, that the longer we are Christians, the harder it can be sometimes to acknowledge our own inadequacies. Sometimes we can be too smart for our own good, and we forget those things. I remember when I was first a Christian, I couldn't. There was a reference in a sermon, and I couldn't find Galatians. And I was going back and forth and back and forth. I was with my peers, and I was really embarrassed. And so I went back, and I looked it up, and it just lit a fire under me. And so I wanted to know where everything was. So I was studying. I was always flipping back and forth. And I read, and I studied, and I asked questions of older men and women. And, you know, I've been disappointed over the time that fire has kind of come back to a little bit of complacency. How many of us are guilty whenever someone, you know, Acts 20, they mentioned this, I've read that. Or Acts 2, excuse me. I've read that. Romans 8. Kyle said he always turns there. I know it. I know it like the back of my hand. Careful, because that just might be some pride coming in. Pride is alive and well in the church, and we have to constantly be denying ourselves and what we want to guard against it. And to get into the applications of this, and these are four things that I see that I need to work on. And I would like to say that I'm humbly, of course, pretty brave man to be doing this, married man, because I'm giving up any future arguments with my wife, because she's just going to say, look back to this sermon, you can't be serious. So with that in mind, and giving all that away, Here's 4 points to take, and then the lesson will be yours. First is to give credit where credit is due. And so let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 3. That's 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 5 and 7. And to start this off, I want us to think about the mentality of humility when things are going right. And I want this to be in the context of the church. If you're part of a living, thriving church and things are going well, who's to credit? Is it the preacher? Is it the elders? Oh, the deacons are doing a great job. Oh, the kids, you know, they're wonderful. Where's the credit at? 1 Corinthians 3, 5 and 7. Who then is Paul and who is Apollos, but ministers through whom you believed, as the Lord gave to each? I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So then neither he who plants is anything, nor he who waters, but God who gives the increase. All glory go to God. When things are going well, it's not because of me and it's not because of you, it's because of God. And it's because we're submitting ourselves to God. We're following his plan so things are going well. That's where it is. Be very, very careful when you say, like, good thing they had me there, because that's an attitude that each of us can have sometimes. And we all strive for the same reward. In verse 8, right there of 1 Corinthians 3, verse 8, now he who plants and he who waters are one, and each one will receive his own reward according to his labor. We don't need the praise of men. We're going to be with God. That is good enough for anything. Now, what about when things are not going good? If you've ever been a part of a church that isn't growing, that you just know something's wrong. Usually at that point, there's not a mentality of accountability. There's some finger pointing. Oh, well, I bet it's this person. That's who it is. Or this person, or this group, whatever it might be. There needs to be an accountability or a mentality of accountability. Look at yourself, because the other way is coming from pride. Humility says, I need to do better. These are the areas that I can control and I can work on, and this is what I'm going to do. The second takeaway is give each other the benefit of the doubt. Christians need to give other Christians the benefit of the doubt. And just to illustrate, just real quickly, this past spring, teenagers, that's my own bias coming in, some people threw some eggs, threw at least one egg at our house, okay? And you would have thought they were declaring war. I mean, it was like, I was out there looking, okay, it had to come from this trajectory, they were probably in a car. I thought it was this group of teenagers, the bus stops in front of our house. And it went straight to vengeance. You know, justice must be served. You know, I got a sprinkler system, and they get there at 7. It's like, all right, they're going to be standing in the street. You know, they'll rule the day. And that's where I came back. Now, the other day, we were talking about this because this is something that I bring up often. And Julia said, well, maybe the egg just dropped out of their pocket. And she's 5, mind you, Julia. And you kind of have to... Yeah, I'm going to get teared up. The innocence of a child, right? That there's no way it dropped out of their pocket. I get that. But she automatically thinks the best of them. Who would do something like that? I think the best of somebody. And we don't do that. You know, so Matthew 18, 1 through 4. I'm trying to hurry. I know I've talked too long. Matthew 18, 1 and 4. So at this time, the disciples came to Jesus saying, who then is greatest in the kingdom of heaven? Then Jesus called a little child to him, set him in the midst of them and said, assuredly, I say to you, unless you are converted and become as a little child, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself as this little child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. I think there's some valuable lessons we can be learned from that, of just give each other the benefit of the doubt. I don't know your heart. You don't know mine. If something happens and I'm offended by you, I need to get over it. You know, there's not some sinister thing that you're out to get me, or that you're doing this one action because you know that it just, I can't take it. And if there is, then there's another problem. But again, you have to give each other the benefit of the doubt. And I think maybe we can do a better job of, especially among God's people. The third takeaway is allowing others to offend us. And so we mentioned 1 Corinthians 6 about taking Christians to court, that they were already wronged or they're already wrong in that they cared more about the world than they did about the unity of God and the church, because they should have just let themselves be offended. Now, what we don't mean here is doctrinal or truth issues, that there are things that God has clearly outlined. We're not saying that you just have to brush those under the rug, and I'll be offended because, you know, you don't think we should teach that baptism is essential. No. But be very careful, because sometimes there's a mentality of, you know, you have two groups of people, you have two individuals, and they just don't like each other, they never have, they do things that offend each other, and then all of a sudden, there comes one doctrinal disagreement. And it could be on some thing you hardly ever hear about. And that's all the spark they need, because the kindling is already there. Because you've offended me over the years, and now I got something on you, and now I'm going to war. Because this is righteous, because I need to do that. And there's a mentality there that we need to be very, very careful of and guard against. Another aspect, too, just for illustration in this, is just our ability to just let things go. Just don't harbor resentment. If there's nothing, if someone sins against you, go to them. Follow what the Bible says. But if they don't and they just get on your nerves, just let it go. Or they do something that you just disagree with, just let it go. Yeah, I feel like frozen up here. You know, I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. And this one, I did not tell Sophia I was going to use this example, so surprise. Sophia, several months ago, from her friends from a long, long time ago, someone sent her a private message and said, "Hey, I just want to make sure you weren't mad at me." It kind of caught her off guard, and the person indicated, said, "You know, you posted a picture the other day. I commented on it, and then someone else commented on it as well. You liked that comment, but you didn't like mine. I just wanted to make sure we're okay." And also, on top of that, that same thing happened a while back. That a while back was literally like years, like over 5 years, okay? I just want to make sure you're not mad at me. And Sophia's, you know, coughing. She's like, "No, I'm just sorry. I was, you know, busy. I didn't mean anything by it." I think she played it well. But at the same time, it's like, welcome to the 21st century, where a comment or not liking something on a social media can bring division in the church. It's ridiculous. Like, don't harbor that. Let it go. Stop wearing our emotions on our sleeves and just be a little more thick-skinned, I think. And then lastly, and then the lesson will be yours, do not think ourselves to be too righteous. You know, you could be a Christian for the first day, or you can be a Christian for 40 years. One of the many things that will separate those two Christians, along with knowledge, should be humility and meekness. Who should be more humble and more meek? Not the Christian that's been a Christian for a day, I'll tell you that. It needs to be someone that has exercised that humility over a lifetime. One Christian said, I heard, and I thought it was very true, says, "Be careful that you don't stand up so straight that you fall over backwards." And that rings true. Yes, we need to live good lives, 100%, absolutely. But that doesn't mean we need to let everyone know about it, and that we need to think ourselves to be above reproach. And in closing, I just want to read one last verse, and that's Ecclesiastes 5. Ecclesiastes 5, 1 and 2. And it says, "Walk prudently when you go to the house of God, and draw near to hear rather than to give the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know that they do evil. Do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. For God is in heaven, and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few." And we said this earlier, but we are all sinners here. It's our tradition to offer an invitation. None of us are perfect. We try to follow what God says, and we need help from everyone. If you are not a Christian, to be blunt and candid, you are living a life of pride because you do not acknowledge who God is. We have this time available. We would love to serve you and to do everything we can to help you become pleasing to God, as we all try to together. If you'd like to respond, now is the time. Thank you.